We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Dingo, the Wolves Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. After a couple weeks of really depressing basketball, we decided to bring on some energy and excitement because Michael and I are probably just going to spend most of the podcast crying to each other. So we decided to bring on Jerry V. Jerry, thanks for coming back on the show.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
So the first thing I got to ask you, looking at this team, are there bright spots? Because there, other than Anthony Davis, I gotta get that out of the way. Anthony Davis is amazing. But are there other bright spots on this team that you like?
You know, it's a great question. I agree with you, Anthony Davis. Other than that, as I go down the list, I'm very disappointed in the overall defensive play, and I still do not walk away from watching the ball game with a feeling of, I like that. I have not had that consistently enough. And for someone who grew up as a New York Knicks fan and still experiencing that headache to this day, over the past couple of decades, it seems, I get that type of a feeling now. They have, as we said on a previous podcast, I believe, they have those moments where they tease you with some fun adventure, but there is still, it's like an ingredient missing out of that great meal you've prepared. There's just something that's not satisfying the taste buds, too sporadic.
So Michael's made this comment a couple times, but just collective basketball IQ on this team. I mean, with Drew Holiday out, is there much basketball IQ left for the squad?
Yeah.
Are there smart basketball players?
I think they know how to play. It's just collectively there doesn't seem to be that person or persons that is that take charge personality alpha dog that's on the court to direct and to be that strong personality, which I think is a vital ingredient you have to have on that club. Holiday's absence, he was en route to becoming that, which I hope for eventually. But they're lacking that. There doesn't seem to be that one guy that is willing to direct. And I think that has to do with younger rosters, the fear of offending someone, the fear of tarnishing a friendship. And that needs to be sacrificed when you consider the fact you have a job to do and some professionalism to win ball games or to at least extend yourself as best you can. And I think that plays a big role. I don't know if you guys see it. I don't see that general, that general guy that's out there that is taking care of the business. I don't think anybody has earned their bones to do that yet.
do you think that maybe this season could be a bit of a blessing in disguise? Because, I mean, I would imagine that with older guys like Drew Holiday and Ryan Anderson out on the court, maybe Anthony Davis wouldn't step up and try to take that role. But because of all the injuries, is it possible that he's being put in that position more than he would have if this team was completely healthy, and maybe he'll ascend to that role sooner than later?
I like it coming from a guard. I would like it coming from a point guard. I think that's a requirement. Some backcourt mate, or unless you have a dynamic personality like a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant, who is fearless when it comes to telling guys what they need, and at times give you the impression that he'll alienate people, but he's been there and he knows how to win rings and he knows what that feeling is like. I'd like to see that come from a guard more so than Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis will play. There's no doubt about that. But I like it from a guy where the ball is in his hands and he sees everything evolving in front of him. But that's not there yet. It's not there yet. I'm old school in a standpoint. I like to have a general on the floor or someone on that floor that is the guy that not doesn't have to be your highest scorer or what have you, but is that tough personality guy that keeps everyone together. It's kind of like the glue of keeping the system running.
Yeah, the only guy I see on this team who I feel really has a chance to develop into that's at the guard role, is Austin Rivers, surprisingly enough, of anybody there. He's the only guy I feel like has any real nasty edge. Like, if he gets beat, he wants to beat the guy who just beat him. Like,
yeah,
he'll chase them down, he'll foul them, but there's no way he could do that with his team. He knows pecking order. He's bottom guard.
Yeah. What people are confused, though, that leader does not necessarily have to be the demonstrative personality, but he has to be the strong guy, the strong voice. Austin Rivers is still a little immature and still very emotional when he plays, which is a good thing. You'd rather have to taper that down versus trying to instill it in a guy. But I just meant the overall poise general that knows the system, is the connector to the coach, that the coach can trust and knows that my guy knows time and score. He knows our system. He knows our play sets. He knows when to break things off, and he's not afraid to go tell a guy, come on now, effort wasn't what we needed tonight. You know, come on now, you need to do whatever. And I don't know if you have that pedigree yet because of the lack of experience and the lack of credibility to be able to be that guy. And that's the problem you have when you're assembling a roster and the roster's too young. Who do the youth – we spoke about this. Who do the young guys go to have dinner and say, tell me what it's like. You know, tell me what you see. Tell me where things are going. What was it like when you won those big games? They don't have that yet. They can mature and evolve eventually, but then you're still asking who's the personality that's going to be that'll emerge from that group. So, you know, we're probably going to be changes within this group. So who's the guy? Who could be that guy? And he could be the guy that gets you 7 points a game only, but he could still be that guy that's fearless when it comes to leadership responsibilities.
You talked a bit about needing a floor general to know the system, to know what the coaches want. Obviously, we got less than half of a season from Drew Holiday. He's out for the rest of the year now. Is
right.
there any chance that by sitting and watching, going to the team meetings, things like that over the course of these last few months, that by next year when he comes into training camp, he's going to have all that stuff down almost to the same level as if he had played this whole year? Or is that only something that you could really learn by actually playing with guys, and so when he comes in next year healthy, he's going to still be a step behind?
That's a good question. You could absorb philosophy, system, what the coaches want. You can dissect game tape with them. You can learn to what to break down on the game tape. You know, you want the motor skills on the floor eventually to play and conduct it all and run it. But no, he can learn a lot from there. He can see and learn and comprehend more and probably get a different view of the ball game on a consistent basis than he would on the floor. So it could be a great learning process for him if he takes advantage of it. And then when he comes back and he's healthy and he can play, sure, he can be that guy in the backcourt and say, okay, let's get this thing done, because he's picked up a lot of wisdom in the time that he was injured too. It's important when you're hurt to observe and watch the game, scout the game, talk to your coaches and your teammates, watch other teams. You get a different perspective from the bench. It's like when coaches become broadcasters and they learn and they see, oh, well, the game looks a little different here. I can watch it in a calmer tone and observe a little more diligently and not get emotionally involved. And they learn about themselves when those NBA coaches, then they decide to go back into coaching. They get a better balance. Same thing can work for players.
So, question for you about Tyreke Evans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've been getting the feeling the past couple weeks, Monty putting him into the starting lineup, though, I think he's just trying to push some buttons there, because to me it feels like Tyreke doesn't care anymore. Like, he'll drive, and his shots are just kind of over the shoulder. He's not really looking at the basket. Do you get that vibe from him? Do you think he's already checked out?
In fact, you and I, and we discussed this many moons ago. I made the comment, and I said, you know, he can get to the rim. He's got the handle, but like at Sacramento, he's not that diligent of a finisher. Takes the eye off the rim. He doesn't have the finishing touch on some of his drives at the rim. He looks. I understand totally what you're saying. A little lackadaisical, you know, out of kilter somewhat. Why that happens, I don't know, because from point A to point one to point two to two and a half, he looks good. Crossover handle, change of speed, little wiggle. Then when he gets up to the rim, it seems a little flippant, doesn't it? He needs to learn to finish, you know, whether it's the pull up or what have you, but yeah, that disturbs me. I'll watch a ball game and I say, ooh, nice move, blow by. Ooh, here comes a rotating defender. Ooh, crossover, he shook him, next move. He's at the rim, and then you see this contortionist at times. Instead of just going up, challenge the defender, take the hit, and go to the line. You don't always need the hang time and the spin and the juke and all that. Just go and challenge the defender that's coming at you, take the hit, get to the free throw line. I think he would find that to be beneficial.
All right, so we've played nice for the first couple of minutes, but let's go into it. I'm gonna let you go first. You and I tend to disagree on this one player more than maybe anything else that
Eric
we
Gordon.
Disagree on. Eric Gordon. So I'll just ask you. Let's for the point of this conversation, I want to make sure that everybody knows we're throwing contract out the window. Even attitude, I'm not going to bring that up, nothing. I'm just talking about on-court basketball. Eric Gordon, the current player, nothing having to do with who he was in Los Angeles, the current player. So I ask you, just point simply, you seem to like Eric Gordon's game way more than I do. Just as a basketball player, tell me what aspects of his game that you like.
He's an ISO offensive player. He can get to the lane and rim. He can shoot the ball. His focus at times does waver. I think it's a frustration about the play that is run because he needs touches. He's a rhythm guy, and you got to find him and get him touches to get him off. Once he gets off, he can get you double figures on a nightly basis. He can shake guys. He's a much better defender than people give him credit for. Open floor, he can move. Decision-making on the break is decent. At times it wavers. You'll see the bad pass, et cetera, but I've seen him do some great things on the break. And I like him because of his ability to shoot the ball off the dribble to the lane and rim, more so than Evans. I like that about him. Now, what can't he do well? I would like him to become more aggressive out of pick and rolls. I would like him more off the catch to get into his offensive move a little quicker, just play an attack. I see him, like Holiday and others, at times, if they're not getting the ball and they get in a rhythm, guys like that get frustrated, and you can see that happen. That can be solved with recognition by your players to say, hey, Eric is hot, got to get him the rock. Let's milk his arm here a little bit. But I like him as a player. Now, you say you don't want to talk attitude, but I don't think you can ignore that. There at times he does frustrate me because doesn't hunt enough. I think when he doesn't get the touches and doesn't get into the flow, he tends to get frustrated by that instead of battling through and make it up on the defensive end and let the game come to him. If he can overcome that, I think he can be valuable. You know, we know the injury prone, whatever, and all of that. But I've seen him do some things as a basketball player that I go, whoa, that's nice. That's good. I like that. And then I see other times from him when I go, okay, where the hell's the guy I just saw 5 minutes ago? But overall, I think he has more pluses than negatives.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, you and I were both watch with the eyes guys and then back it up with the stats. So, I mean, almost everything you say, I felt like I've seen the exact opposite this year. I can't, you know, I personally don't think there is a player on this team other than Tyreek Evans, but, you know, he's not a shooter in any aspect. There's not a player on this team who I trust less pulling up off the dribble to take a shot. There's not a player on this team who I feel like once they start to make the move towards the basket that they have no it's not even in the realm of possibilities that he's going to make a play for somebody else. So
you put Gordon in that category?
I did. This is what my eyes told me. So I went back and I've checked numerous databases to look at what the numbers say to see if my eyes tell me the same. And when you're talking about off the dribble shooter, he's a 35% shooter from two and a 28% shooter from three. To compare that to somebody like Drew Holiday, Drew Holiday's 41% and 38%. Eric Gordon.
Yeah, here's the deal. Here's one thing, and I love analytics, and I had all the notes from MIT. A bunch of guys sent me a ton of stuff. I love the analytics. The one thing they don't do, though, when you look at isolation, was it an isolation set play? Did the isolation come out of a broken down pick and roll? Was it delayed isolation? What was the space? How did the ball get to him? Because what I noticed a lot that frustrates him as well as Evans is at times this basketball team really fails to recognize how guys are getting open. And I'll sit there and watch, and I'll go, there he is, get it to him. And it'll come late. Rivers will keep the ball in his hands a little too long. Holiday will do it at times, take that extra between-the-leg dribble and miss the guy. And there are times where I see Evans and Gordon suffer from the fact that the club, the young guys, haven't totally mastered how to occupy defenders away and off the ball and how to do that other than standstill positions. And that hurts an Evans who needs space. It hurts a Gordon. It hurts a Holiday at times. I'll just put it this way. It will hurt your guards at times. And then you see them force issues. So I think all of it plays the role on percentages diminish. If you ignore the fact you have a rhythm player that needs to get touches and shots early in a game, like Davis, to get him off. The stats, I think the analytics are a wonderful thing, but I think they have to be applied correctly from the overall aspect of the game is what affects that percentage? Why is that percentage low? You know, is he not getting space in his shot? Is it shot selection? Is he taking it into the crowd because it's never there and he's pissed off? There's a lot of things there, but I still think he's a good player. I think what weighs him down is his frustration. And if the analytics show one thing, my eye test tells me he's a good basketball player that needs to get involved early and the numbers will improve.
Yeah,
you can't sit then come in the game. Oh, you've been sitting? Come on in, get it going. Coach, come on, I'm cold. You got to keep him hot. You got to keep him warm and hot.
Yeah, I mean, personally, if I were to draw up a grade chart for him, I'd give him above average at spot-up shooting this year and literally average to below average at every other aspect. So, Ryan, you're the third wheel. Go ahead. What do you feel about Gordon?
I want to go on record as saying I totally disagree.
so what's my take on Gordon?
I can see your point. Yeah, I'm not happy with all of that, but I like his skills. I think more of what's happening to him is happening between the ears.
Well, I mean, I gotta step back for a second and remember, Gordon didn't look that awful early in the season when he got to play next to guys who were helping him out.
That's right.
He has looked a lot worse lately than he did at the beginning of the season. I never thought he was a world beater at the beginning of the season. I kept kind of hoping he would turn on and become pretty impressive, and he never did. But then he's on a team with a lot of scorers. My overall impression of Eric Gordon is at his best this season, I would have probably given him like a B-minus grade. But over the last month, I mean, a C, I would give him like a D-plus at best. I mean, he's just...
Well, the B-minus is fair, though, because B and above, considering this club, is not bad. You bring up a very good point. What he's playing with now, Rivers doesn't recognize guys on the floor quick enough. Roberts at times does. He's sporadic. And you look at the guard play and how that greatly affects what's going on. And you look at the fact that Anderson is not playing. You're losing depth on your front line. You're requiring the guards to do so much more. Defenders can apply themselves differently when they know you're not a three-ball shooting team. It's like a rush hour out there defending the Pelicans because they can't create space. And when we spoke several times in the first half of the season, we were all saying, wow, they can create that space now. We have off-the-dribble guys. We have things. That space is gone.
Yeah.
It's vamoose, and that's dramatically affected these guys since the injuries hit.
Let me ask you this, Jerry. So
sure.
We disagree, but so let's
that
imagine.
That doesn't mean I won't buy you dinner.
Let's imagine everybody's healthy. Let's imagine nobody's healthy. Whatever. Does Eric Gordon, if he is not making his shots on a given night, does he do anything else to help your team win basketball games? And if so, what? If his shot is not falling.
Okay. He's a better defender than Evans. He's a better defender than Roberts. He's a smarter defender in the scheme of things than your guards. Now, if Holiday was there too, it would have been fun to see them both in the backcourt defensively. So as a defender, I like him. I think that the lack of personnel and the losing has taken its toll on a few guys. He might be one of them. That's the mental toughness aspect, which is an area that bothers me at times with him and some others. Not that he's not a tough kid, but the concentration and ability to play regardless of the obstacles. So that's one area that I think he's underrated by some. And then you could say, well, wait a minute, how good is he? But then you got to understand the off-the-ball defenders on this club are not adequate. So that exposes a guy that can't touch, can't hold, can't grab in a 2-3 dribble perimeter defensive game where you look to defend and force angles. But you don't have adequate help there, so that might further expose a guy when he gets beat off the dribble because he can't funnel guys to areas because there's no defenders there to funnel to other than Davis, if that makes sense. So that affects things. So defensively, I would have to say that he's acceptable.
What about rebounding or making players better on the offensive end by playmaking? I mean, do you think he impacts?
I mean, making what players better? Tell me, what players better? When you look at what he's playing with now, how is he going to make someone else better? And what can he do to make someone better when you have to get scoring from him and Evans and others because Davis can't do the whole thing for you? Where is it going to come from? This basketball team is having a hard time scoring the ball. You know, they're, 20th in the league in points scored, and their defensive efficiency is horrible, taking its toll. But when guys say, he makes you better. He makes you better how? When there's no recipient to what he can do to help you that can finish plays off. Does that make sense?
I mean, I guess, but I mean, I saw James Harden go to a pretty talentless, relatively Houston team last year, and he made that offense better. I see others.
Because he's one of the better, because he's a terrific player.
So
Harden is a hunter. He's a hunter, and we just said that's what we lack in some of our guys. He's a hunter. I mean, he loves to score. He loves to attack. He's possessed, and that's why you love his personality of play. You know, he's an extraordinary player.
Okay, so him and Gordon are nowhere near the same level.
No, Harden is better. I love Harden. I mean, Harden, to me, I mean, wow, this guy's fearless. He'll attack King Kong if he had to. He's fearless. You know, he's got the experience. He's a tough kid.
All right, I'm going to call a halt to the Gordon argument. And
yeah,
we'll
you know,
move
you'd like
on.
To sit down with him. You'd like to sit down with him and ask him, you know, what the blank is the matter with you sometimes? Of course, that's part of it. Because it's frustrating. But I think he's frustrated because the team isn't winning. Like I've seen Chris Paul go through those phases when he was here, where I thought his head was going to explode, and it affected his game when injuries took place or when he got hurt and coming back from injuries. But, yeah, that's one of the things I'd like to do is sit down and say, excuse me, we need to talk about his game because he can still be a better player.
Yeah. The only thing I would say about Gordon is I would probably enjoy watching him offensively. He'd be pretty high on my list if it wasn't for the fact that every third dribble, he leaves the ball behind. Like, he makes a head fake and then leaves the ball where he was standing.
Uh-huh.
Or he dribbles it off his own foot. I've never seen a guy who's like a primary ball-handling attacking guard have so many ball-handling mishaps. Like, he just, it's always kind
he's
of like...
He's trying to force the issue. He knows other guys can't score the ball. He's trying to take on and do more than should be required of him in the absence of other guys. So he's trying to do too much. He's trying to do too much. Chill out, give the ball up. It'll come back to you. So that frustration is, man, we got to score the ball. We can't score. We're 20th in the league in scoring. I got to get its numbers. The other guys can't do it. What happens is you guys know. When you force it, what happens? Turnovers, miscues, lose concentration. You start going into space where there really isn't any space. All that frustrating stuff. That's why coaches get on Xanax.
All right, so let me ask you about some of the brand new faces on the team, and just get your. I'm gonna make you make a hard call, okay?
Okay.
Next year, when this team forms, I want you to say likely or not likely that these guys will be back with the team next year.
Okay, hit me.
Alexa Ajinka.
I have to say a could be. He's a good backup. I'll go yes for now.
Okay. Al-Farouq Aminu.
Can I say hope not?
Yes. Yes, you can say that.
You know, I mean, if they don't improve that position, the three of us will be talking again, and we'll hear drinks being poured on ice as we speak. They got to improve that position.
Yeah.
You can't survive in this league without a small forward of that swing. You can't score the ball and get to the hole and score. You can't do it. You just can't.
Well, that leads me to my next person.
Sure.
Any chance about Luke Babbitt? Is he a player?
He's, you know, a stationary three-baller type. He's not bad. A challenge for him, question mark. Challenge.
Okay. Brian Roberts.
Probably not.
Thank God.
Okay. Greg Steemsma.
The Steamer. It is the Steamer, D.A. Steamer, which, by the way, we nicknamed on this particular podcast quite some time ago. The Steamer has a shot. Lack of mobility, strictly a backup. He has a shot because he's big and he plays hard. So I'll say, why not?
Okay.
Strictly backups.
All right, got one more for you.
Yeah.
Jason Smith.
See, that's a good one. It's a tradable commodity that might be attractive to somebody. As a talent, yes, he should be back. But because he could be a potential commodity, you know, you can easily say he won't because of tradable talent. So I wouldn't know how to answer that question. Other than saying he's a chip that could be put into a deal because teams like him. But I'll say he'll be back.
Okay.
Would you say that he's more likely to go if the Pelicans get that veteran leader that you've been talking about? Because it seems like, and I know he hasn't been through battles, but it seems like, I mean, he's the longest tenured guy on this team. He's a guy... that'll hustle, do all the dirty work. Do you think that it would be a little easier to let him go if you brought in, let's say, a Luol Deng or somebody of that nature who was the clear-cut...
Deng's older. Deng's, what, about 31? He'd be 31 next year?
31, 32.
I mean, but I see what you mean, that type of player.
Right.
I think it'd be tough to let him go from the standpoint he's a dynamite guy, he's a locker room guy, personality guy, he's very likable, he plays hard, he's a hustle guy, his game has evolved tremendously since he was with Philadelphia. So it would be tough to let him go from that standpoint, because you want a character guy like that on the team who's a good character and a good guy, but who also plays hard. He's not a character guy that's a softie, if that makes sense to you. So I think from that regard, it would be tough to let him go. You need guys like that to balance out your paycheck team. So in that area, I think he can be a nice commodity for you, provided that they upgrade some of that frontline athleticism.
And I mean, the one that everybody wants to hear about, and I'll end with this one, and I know you teased it on your last podcast, so you don't have to give us everything, save some for yourself, but I mean, Monty Williams, he's a guy that fans are really disappointed by this season, and yeah, we all know that injuries have come, and there's reasons why this team might not be as good as a lot of us expected, but the fans really have their targets set seemingly on Monty Williams and getting rid of him this offseason and starting off new.
Yeah.
What are your ideas with Monty? What should he accept blame for? What's not his fault? What's your overall evaluation on Monty and the job he's done?
I don't think he's a guy that you let go. He's got the new contract. When you look at the last 4 years and the roster, what it's gone through, the team has not been healthy. The pieces are not there. So I would not like to see him relieved of his coaching duties because of this year. I think next year would be a big year for him. If there is a disappointment on what this club has not done, forget about the record. There hasn't been that top to bottom overall consistent tenacity on the defensive side of the ball. I know they're inadequate. They're a horrible defensive rebounding team. They're not that tough on or off the ball. But I mean collectively just a tenacious attitude, because as a team, and you're not going well, you can measure a lot about the guys that are playing by how much they lay out on a night-to-night basis, energy-wise, that tenacity, that attack mode. I don't see enough of that. Now, is it because of their lack of experience, the grind, they're not used to it? I don't know. But even if you're not winning, it's okay on these guys to crack the whip and handle it and dangle the carrot and say, hey, look, you want to stay in the league? You want to prove to people that we should be giving you minutes? You want to prove to another organization you should be on their roster and proving minutes? Well, you need to start busting your tuchus. And this is a critical part of the season for that. That disappoints me. The demands that need to come on this club. I'd like to see him, and because I like him personally. I spent time with him and chatted with him about basketball, a lot of basketball. I would like to see once in a while him bark at some guys over the course of the game that are letting some things slip. Now, I know he'll get on guys, and I know he respects guys, but sometimes just leaving messages through the media or comments at a post-game press conference might not be enough. I'd like to see some demands. Now, if it's not his style, because I know he can be an intense guy, you know, maybe young guys respond to that directive, you know, that direct command. And so I'd like to see just a little sprinkling of that. But then again, you alter a coach's style if it's not him, you know?
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens this summer.
Yeah, you know, here's something else, too. Because this is asked of me quite frequently. When teams are losing, they're always going to target the head coach. That's the way it goes. They know that. The frustration. Because you got to market your club, you got to sell tickets, you got to give the fans a reason why your product is viable going into next year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that by just changing the coach? Does that sell tickets? Does that enhance marketing? No, it does not if you don't enhance the roster. So I don't think at this particular time it's a coach issue. It's a roster issue. So now guys will target their bets. Well, there are times a general manager can't just do what he wants. He has to answer to a person up above. I think what we will see, I don't know if you recall the conversation we had. There's two groups of ownership. One that wants to win, the other that has to win. Mm-hmm. That has to win. If they don't win, they can't sleep at night. Some people will say they want to win, but you want people to be the have to win. Because if they're not winning, they're very upset and their life is in shambles. We will see this off season on what the next step will be of assembling this roster to take that step next year to sneak into the playoffs. It's very critical that you be very shrewd and diligent to acquire the two pieces that you're going to at least allow you to make that next step. Because I think it's vital from the standpoint of marketing, ticket sales, fan base. You got to give the fans some hope and a reason to embrace your product. You can't just do it with sizzle and dog and pony shows and appearances and this and lights and amenities and giveaways. Because you guys know all of that would mean nothing to everyone if the talent on the floor isn't compelling enough for you to go to a ball game. And that's critical this offseason. Absolutely critical.
Yeah. All right, I got one last question for you, Jerry, and then we'll let you go. We were just talking about what could happen this offseason. Basically, the big five that came into the season, the five big money players that the Pelicans had, they got to play all of 98 minutes together on the court this season.
Horrible.
Which is just, it's ridiculous. I'm not even going to ask you if you were Dell Demps. Just, would you like to see those five guys come back next year and give them another shot? Or have you seen enough that you think that it should be shaken up and that five probably won't work that well together?
I need another three-baller. Anderson is a mystery right now. We don't know there. Nobody's talking about him.
Yeah.
How serious is that injury?
They're supposed to give us an update on Friday.
How serious is that injury? Mm-hmm. Is it going to require a surgery? Is it going to require a fusion? How serious is it really to impact his game? You cannot wait and look at that coming off that. You need a three-baller to be brought in. And you need a big that gives you some play that can go alongside Anthony Davis. That's imperative because you're an absolute horrible defensive rebounding team. You don't get to the line enough. You don't shoot the three enough. You do not defensive rebound. You need personnel that can help address those areas. Because if you don't, you're going to be back into the same dilemma. And how far do you want to chase people over the next 2 years as far as winning is concerned? You cannot come back again next year and lack that firepower from the perimeter as a jump shooter and get to the line type team and defensive rebounding. You know, I need to scratch that on my chest with a knife so I won't forget that. But that is absolutely critical from a basketball standpoint.
Right.
You can't defensive rebound and shoot the three in this league the way it is now. It's difficult because that three just fills so many empty possessions. And that Anderson is a mystery, and I hope he's going to be okay. But that's a question mark as to how viable he will be coming off that injury or how serious is it. And I hope he'll be okay.
Yeah, same here. Okay. You got any questions for Jerry, Mike? Are you good?
No, that's just hoping next time that we all get down and chat a lot more optimism.
Critical time for the guys left on a team, the young, you know, the Roberts and all, and Rivers, because Rivers has to put himself in a position where he has to force that coaching staff to give him more minutes. And this is an old conversation we had. He has to kick Roberts' tuchus in practice every day. He needs to punish him and steal as many minutes as he can as a basketball player to validate his presence. And this is for guys that want to stay on rosters, stay on this team, stay on a roster in the league and get minutes or get more minutes. This is critical for those guys because a lot of eyes are watching.
Yep. All right. So thanks for coming on, Jerry.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure.
And we'll bring you back on later this year after we've won 20 games straight and entered the playoffs, right?
My eyeballs are full of basketball, guys. Can't wait for the playoffs.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, Michael, here's the plan. You find a team that wants a GM that will hire Jerry V for us. And then we convince our team to trade Eric Gordon to that team.
I feel like you're my podcast partner. I feel like you didn't stick up for me.
I didn't stick up for you, but, you know, I mean, while you guys were arguing back and forth, I was sitting there thinking about that, though, that we actually had an argument at one point where we just talked Tyreek versus Eric Gordon, and we were saying Eric Gordon was a better defender than Tyreek Evans overall, a little bit better, and that he had these other talents, and we both kind of went Tyreek, but Eric Gordon wasn't far behind, but at the time, both of them were playing fairly decent, and if they were surrounded by better players, a lot of their weaknesses wouldn't be as noticeable.
Right. I mean, but Eric Gordon has never been an off the dribble shoot. Even earlier, we were making fun of him.
He is never going to be a number one option. I do 100% believe that if you had an offense that was set up so that he was a major part of it, he would average 20 points a game. I still think that. But he would also probably be taking like 18 shots. He would be mini Rudy Gay.
Yeah, no.
If you had to do that.
18 shots and turning it over just as much, if not more, than he assisted it. Like, there's just so many numbers that bother me, and I know, you know, I didn't get into all the numbers I had in my arsenal.
I saw you were lined up to attack poor Jerry.
Lined up to just throw the numbers, and Jerry, smart veteran guy that he is just saying that he's not gonna pay attention to the numbers because it doesn't tell you anything, and it's a good tech. But we're talking about a guy who has like a 20% turnover ratio on the pick and roll. His off the dribble shooting is equal to the only guard that gets heavy minutes that Eric Gordon is as bad as is Victor Oladipo, who's a guy that came into this league and everybody knew that he would have to work on his shooting. Eric Gordon and Oladipo basically have the exact same numbers shooting off the dribble, according to SportVU. So I mean, when you throw the $15 million into the fray, there's no way you could want him on this team. But even at $7-8 million, I wouldn't take him. I watched Gerald Green, who's a guy that we've made fun of in prior podcasts. I watched the two of them play in this recent Phoenix game, and I would straight up forget about contracts. I would take Gerald Green over Eric Gordon just because, and I figured it out why what I dislike so much about him, especially on this team, is he has that really slow shot, and he has to basically bring it all the way down to his waist before he hoists it up. And when you combine that with how small he is, you see teams cheating off of him and, you know, playing their defense where they're constantly rotating. And unless Eric Gordon has like 7 or 8 feet of space when he catches it, he doesn't even bother to try to get the shot off because he can't. So, you know, ideally, even if you were to surround this team with shooters, surround Anthony Davis, and Eric Gordon has been a good spot-up shooter. He's been good at two things this year. Offensively, spot up shooting, and he's actually really good in transition this year. I mean, he's making 51% of his threes in transition, so he's really good in that situation. But again, transition threes are often the most wide open threes, and he's good at those, but it takes him so long, and because he's so small, to get off that shot, that guys could just rotate, and he doesn't take nearly as many as say somebody like Gerald Green does. Gerald Green, he's a guy, if you give him 3 feet of space, he catches the ball, he rises up over you, he has a much quicker release, he actually gets that shot off, where Eric Gordon, it's like slow motion with that guy. So Jerry V was too smart for me. He didn't let me get all my stuff out, but that's it. I'm gonna finish it even though my opponent has left and won.
That's right. You know, to keep it that, you're like the guy, you know, you get in an argument with somebody and then they walk away and you say, oh, that's what I should have said.
Yeah, I come up.
You had written it all down ahead of time. You're like, this is what I'm going to say. No.
The smart pickup line to the girl 4 hours after she already left the bar with somebody else.
Right.
But, I mean, not that it's pointless to talk about all these losses, but really it's quite depressing. I'd rather kind of close up this podcast just talking about general themes and ideas that we've seen, and the one that's been the most optimistic for me is Monty Williams has basically come out and said, look, you know, I was focused just on winning earlier in this year, and if a guy was playing bad, I would pull him out and try to put somebody else in to just win that game right in front of me, and in the process I might have lost my vision on developing these guys. So he basically said, look, I gave Al-Farouq Aminu 2+ years and it's just not working out. He's pulling Al-Farouq. He's pulling Steemsma unless the team gets in foul trouble like they did against the Clippers. He even pulled Morrow. And we've seen in the last two games, we are taping this before the Sacramento game for those wondering. We've seen in the last two games Rivers get more minutes than Roberts. We've seen Ajinka get more of a run. We see Aminu out. We see Tyreek starting. What have been your overall ideas with Monty's new philosophy, and are you at all excited over these last 20 games or so to see different guys and getting either minutes or getting more minutes?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's really all I have left to really look forward to anymore. Now that Jrue Holiday has been declared out, I don't even get to see those guys play together. So, I mean, really, it was kind of depressing watching the basketball games the past couple weeks where you see his normal rotations. They were losing by just a little bit every single time. But it was the same guys. We had the same problems where we were like, we want to see these young guys. Because honestly, I'm willing to bet that you and I had basically checked out on this season and wanted to see the young guys for probably a month and a half now.
Yeah.
We saw the writing on the wall, and it took Monty a little while longer, which it's not shocking. He's paid to win games. So, yeah, I mean, seeing what happens with this team when you run with the young guys, like, can Austin Rivers take pressure from an actual starting group? How good is he defensively? Like, watching him try to take Goran Dragic after watching Brian Roberts try to take Goran Dragic, that was really instructive to me. Because, honestly, Rivers didn't have a whole lot of success stopping Dragic either, but he made Dragic at least change what he was doing. That was interesting. It wasn't fully effective in the end, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff I want to see. I want to see, can they impact the game, and what do they have? So, yeah, I mean, who are you most excited to see of this young crew?
Honestly, it's still Rivers. I just, as excited as I was about Withy, the more I see him, the more I really don't know if he'll be a legit NBA player until he puts on at least 15, 20 pounds. And it's weird because he's skinny and he's got to put on weight, but I really don't think he's in that good of shape. I don't think his conditioning's that good. I saw there was a stretch of, I forget what game it is, since they're all losses, they all run together. But he had a nice little stretch where he had a dunk, a block. You know, he was making some nice plays. There was about 6 or 7 trips up the floor. But then Monty, you know, even though the Pelicans were playing well, Monty had to call a timeout because Withy was just spent. And, you know, he's a guy whose body in multiple ways is just not ready for this league yet. I think the skill set is there, particularly on the defensive end. I think he could become a rim protector. I think he's a good offensive rebounder and could get you garbage points. But I'm still not 100% sold. I think there'll be a battle between him and Ajinka next year for the backup spot. But either way, I don't see either of those guys becoming guys who make significant impacts. I still hold out hope for Rivers. I think his spot up, his catch and shoot jumper, his 3-point shot has been terrific. I think he can still get to the rim at will. I think he has stretches where he misses his free throws, but I would have never believed that he would make 17 free throws in a row like he did just a couple weeks ago. I still think, I mean, if you're looking at a guy who I would say made a 40% improvement this year, what happens if that happens again in the summer and then the summer after that? I still think that there's some potential there for him to become a real legitimate, you know, rotation NBA player that's a fringe starter / really key reserve. So he's the one I'm looking most forward to. How about you?
Yeah. You already talked about Withy. Withy was actually probably the one I was most excited to see just because I had my little my little happiness commentary about Withy earlier in the season where I talked about how I liked how he could move his feet. And I actually saw the exact same thing. It was during the Phoenix game where he was playing really well, and then they blew the whistle and pulled him out, and they replaced him with Al Farouk. And honestly, they started their, 25-5 run or whatever it was in the fourth quarter that made my my stomach hurt. It's not because Withy stepped out. But Withy was actually covering the rim when Davis would lunge out on other people. And that was what was different when Withy went to the bench, was there was nobody covering Davis. So if Davis had to chase Marcus Morris out to the three-point line, or he had to switch and cover Goran Dragic rolling to the basket, Withy came across and covered and would at least contest whoever was going to the basket next. And nobody else on the team was interested in doing that. I guess Ajinka was interested in doing that, but he had to figure out how to get his feet out of the cement before he could do it. So it was I'm still hoping to see more Withy out there. Darius Miller, have you given up on Darius Miller?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see any way that, I mean, maybe if we bring him back for a 13th, 14th roster spot, but at this point, yeah. his qualifying offer and contract would be that of a veteran minimum salary. I mean, we just saw the Pelicans pick up Anthony Morrow in the offseason on a veteran minimum salary. You could get a better player for that. So, and I know a lot of people are always worried of, oh, he's Anthony Davis's friend. You don't want to get Anthony Davis mad and you know, he'll leave the first chance he gets. First of all, you know, Darius Miller, I've seen them interact in summer league. They know each other, but they're not great friends. And Anthony Davis converses and is better friends with other guys on this team than Darius Miller. And number two, Anthony Davis wants to win games. I don't think he cares if a guy he's somewhat friends with is on the team or not over somebody else. I think he wants players to help him win games. So keeping Darius Miller around because they, you know, him and your superstar were on the same team in college isn't something I expect this team to do. But Rivers, on the other hand, I've really liked that he's been getting more minutes than Brian Roberts. I don't really care who starts the game as long as Rivers gets more minutes. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Rivers and Withy are the two guys that I'm looking forward to seeing over these 20-plus games.
Yeah.
Specifically Anthony Davis with Jeff Withy and seeing if, you know, those are two guys who could play together. I mean, they really do protect the rim well at times. So,
yeah,
looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody. I mean, Luke Babbitt, I think Jerry V pretty much nailed. He's a very poor man's version of Ryan Anderson.
Which I think you need, and I'll keep around for, I mean, Babbitt's deal is less than $1 million next year.
Yeah.
You don't know until you know 100%, until Ryan Anderson says, I've resumed activities. The doctors have cleared me. I'm not going to play the rest of this year, but I'll be ready to go. Until you know that, you know, it's not bad to have Babbitt around. And, you know, if Ryan Anderson misses 5-6 games next year, let's just say other injuries. Wow, sorry, basketball reference. But let's say Ryan Anderson has to miss a game with a sprained toe, or it's the same thing as we saw at the beginning of this year. It's good to have a poor man's version of him just so the team could run some of the same sets as opposed to, oh, Ryan Anderson's out. Let's put in, I don't know, Jason Smith or, you know, whatever. And now all of a sudden the pick and pop three is a pick and pop long two and, you know, just running different sets. So I like having a poor man's Anderson on the team for less than $1 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. The only other young player, Ajinka. Is there anything there that you're still excited about?
I do like the athleticism. Yeah. I mean, we've seen some follow-up slams. Again, this is just another question of whether he has too big of a role. Like, do I think that he's would at least be an average backup center? I do.
Okay.
If you're talking about Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis starting together or, you know, playing the majority of time together, and now he gets to play off the bench for 12, 15 minutes, I like that. Or if you bring in a starting center in the offseason. Like I said, I think he's competing with Withy for the backup center position. Neither guy makes even $1 million next year. Let him compete. Let the best man win. I think that either of those guys could be a good fourth or fifth big.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Ajinka's got, like, moments where you're just like, wow, I mean, he's got every physical skill you could want in a center. And then you see, like, games like against Dallas where, you know, they ran every time he's on the court, they ran every play directly at him.
Yeah.
Every play, one after another, until Ajinka fouled so many times that he had to be taken out. So he doesn't have the ability to move his feet. And he, I mean, this is the player who's managed to make Monty Williams step away from his, I'm going to hedge really hard on the pick and roll. Like if you go back and watch when Ajinka first arrived, when they went on the pick and roll, he would jump out and try to cut the guy off and foul him all the time.
Right.
And now Ajinka drops back, probably not far enough or sometimes a little bit too far. He's not great in space. But Monty didn't do that for anybody. Everybody had to jump out until Ajinka came along. So
yeah. I will say the only thing I'm disappointed by in this youth movement is I don't want to see Anthony Morrow's minutes cut. He's a guy that I really want to bring back next season. I mean, the things I hear out of the locker room and work, I mean, he's always one of the first guys there, one of the last ones to leave. He's a good veteran leader. I want him back, and I don't want to sacrifice his minutes. I want him playing his minutes, getting his shot. Cause I mean, dream scenario, if you could move Eric Gordon, you know, I want Anthony Morrow getting the heavier minutes or being like the quote unquote fake starter as Tyreek comes off the bench or being the main backup. I mean, he's a guy that I really hope is not just a one-year player on this team. I expect him to decline his player option, but I would love to bring him back for $2 to $2.5 million, you know, a contract in that range next year and have him be the primary backup guard or the fourth guard, whatever it happens to be, the guard that gets 15, 16 minutes a game, because I don't think, you know, specifically his skill set is easy to replicate. I feel like when he's open, that three's going in every single time. I wouldn't sacrifice his minutes. Like, I'd rather just quit and give up on Darius Miller and let Anthony Morrow get those minutes than Darius Miller. So that's the only thing I'm not in love with about this whole youth movement.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from there. And you know, what's more entertaining than watching Darius Miller hit a wide open three in transition and then come back down the court pounding his chest, and next time he goes down the court, he has to, like, dribble between his legs a couple times because now he's awesome.
Yeah, Anthony Morrow. Yeah.
Did I say David?
You said Darius Miller.
Darius Miller. Okay, sorry. Anthony Morrow. Well, man, I'm even worse.
Yeah, he's just a guy I don't want to see, you know, the team run
I think you're seeing them bow to reality, though. I really think that they look at their backcourt and they got a pretty full one. They don't plan on being able to move either of their guards. I mean, and they got Austin Rivers and they got Pierre Jackson. I really think that they're just saying, well, you know, he was good this year, but we're bowing to reality. We're not going to be able to bring him back next year for what he's going to want. So,
see, I don't think he gets that much.
Say goodbye to Anthony Morrow, Michael.
I disagree. I don't think he gets that much. And he has a different skill set than all of those guys you named. I mean, I definitely see a role for him. So I would rather just, my dream world, Aminu, Miller, and Steamsman never get off the bench. And let Morrow have those backup swing minutes as a shooter. And, you know, play him with Withy and let Rivers have some space. But anyway, I've liked it pretty much overall. I just don't want to see us run Anthony Morrow off. I mean, he ran off, in some ways, Bellinelli. He goes and wins the three-point competition. He lights it up for Chicago, San Antonio. You sit Ariza to get young guys minutes, and I still love the Trevor Ariza trade. But if anybody's seen what Trevor Ariza's been doing this year, it's been kind of unreal. I mean, I think yes, there are plenty of shooters out there, but
it's also a contract here.
Yeah, well, that's always the case with Aminu, with Ariza. But yeah, I just again, I'm just nitpicking here, but I do like the youth movement. But really, I'd like to keep playing Morrow, and he's really a guy that I would like to see sign for a reasonable contract coming back, you know, next. I mean, he's 28 years old, and he's just a shooter. It's not like he's an old guy that's going to be out of the league in 2-3 years. So that's it on that end. I mean, as far as the games, I felt like the Dallas game was there for the taking, but then, of course, Anthony Davis had to go and get hurt.
Right.
You had Phoenix.
And that, don't forget, though, then there was a complete meltdown by the team. Like, just
Davis left, yeah.
Anthony Davis left, and then, like, the whole team just forgot how to play basketball.
Oh,
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that was the first game I was live tweeting.
Oh.
And I was live tweeting, making comments on it. Anthony Davis gets hurt. And my head started hurting, and there weren't any more tweets for me. I was so depressed.
Yeah, it was a tough game. The Phoenix game, I think, might have been one of the best offensive display that we saw from Anthony Davis, I think, in his career. I mean, we were seeing all kind of jumpers, floaters. I mean, I know this is blasphemy, and I'm not comparing him to this guy, but I've always said David Robinson, but honestly, like, Anthony Davis had a face-up, drive-left, floating jumper that he made in that game where he kind of went left baseline and shot across his body, shot a floater. David Robinson, he did a lot of things well. I never saw David Robinson do that. That was more, and again, not as good as this player, but just the skill set, that was more Durantish to me. Like, even Anthony Davis in the past has said that he kind of looked up to Durant and modeled his offensive game in some ways. I don't think he'll ever get to that level, but I think a hybrid of David Robinson and Kevin Durant, just the way that he could get his shot off from anywhere, you know, and maybe even have close to unlimited range. I mean, I really wouldn't be surprised if we see 50 three-point attempts next year and continuing to grow. I mean, people think of Kevin Love as a three-point shooter now, and they don't remember early in his career he was not a three-point shooter by any stretch of the imagination that, you know, that developed. And again, I don't think he gets to that level, but I do think we continue to see an increase in his offensive game. I mean, what do you think? So Kevin Love's three-point rate is 34% this year. What do you think it was in his rookie year?
Oh, I don't know. Probably like, I would even be surprised if he took three-point shots his rookie year.
Yeah, it was 3%.
3%. Wow,
Tyreek Evans has somebody to be to look down
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I mean, it was 10%, then it jumped to 16%, then 20, 26, 30, 34. I mean, it slowly went up every year, but at the same age, at 20 years of age, Kevin Love only took a handful of three-pointers. He attempted 19 the entire year. Back when he was 20, went 2 of 19. And now, flash forward to 5 years later, he's already jacked up 350 with about 25 games to let go in the season. So I thought that was exciting. We just ran into a really hot Dragic. That's a game that unquestionably, if we have Jrue Holiday, I think that we win with somebody able to slow Dragic. And then, of course, the Morris twins killed us. So it's just been a whole bunch of things this past week, but I still think that there's a couple things to be optimistic about. I think people that are rooting for the tank really don't realize how bad this team would have to be to finish in the bottom five record-wise. They would probably have to lose every game, maybe win one or two at the most. That just ain't happening. So root for the, you know, the development of the young guys, and don't disillusion yourself into thinking that we're going to keep the pick this year.
Yeah. Just think of it as gravy if it ever does happen. So, I don't know, got anything else to talk about, or are we good here? And we'll come back a little later this week when maybe we have a couple wins that we can talk
about.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. I'm just really looking forward to whenever we do a podcast on the day of the game, the Pelicans lose that game, but we're doing the podcast before Kings game.
Which means absolutely nothing.
Well, if we win tonight, I think people are going to demand that we do this before every game. So it's a blessing and a curse, but we'll see. Kings tonight, Lakers tomorrow. Some winnable games coming up. Hopefully they'll do that.
Yep. And thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know.